This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. The music that you have just heard is by composer and sound artist Ellen Reed from her new recording entitled Big Majestic. Ellen Reed writes as if she is in tune with the visceral qualities of nature. On hearing Reed's music, I reflect on this quote from composer and conductor Nadia Boulanger. Nothing is better than music when it takes us out of time. Well, taking us out of time and literally bending notes is Ellen Reed's strong suit. Originally from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Ellen Reed found early on that the human voice was powerful in lyricism and storytelling. Her compositions span the arenas of opera, sound design, avant-pop, film scoring, ensemble, and choral writing. In 2019, she was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for her opera, Prism. A daring and oftentimes discomforting work, it searches the extremes of sexual and emotional abuse. But as in all her music, Prism reaches out and lays an expansive landscape for the listener. In 2020, Ellen Reed created Soundwalk, a GPS-connected musical and visual experience, choreographing urban parks as interactive soundscapes. This successful project was created for natural wonder areas across the globe as an interactive experience for all of us to enjoy. Reed serves as the contemporary music chair of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra and is the first composer in residence with both the Concertgebouw Concert Hall and Concertgebouw Orchestra in Amsterdam. She has recently launched her latest recording, Big Majestic, an album written for the Soundwalk project with performers ranging from the Kronos String Quartet to Shabaka Hutchings, James McVinney, and Liesl. So Ellen Reed, welcome to Center Stage. It is such an honor to have you on my platform.
Thank you, Pamela. It's wonderful to be here, and thank you for that lovely intro. I love that Nadia Boulanger quote. That was so beautiful.
Let's talk about that. Is she in your veins, you know, in what she's saying about music and creation?
Yeah, that quote definitely resonated with me. And as a female composer, you know, she's somebody who I look to as an inspiration.
That's fantastic. Nadia Boulanger also had a second quote, that music was a combination of disobedience and discipline.
Oh, I love that. It's full of the quotes.
It's interesting because she was such a trendsetter at a time when women didn't have that platform. And it also says to me that there is such a great paradox in music making.
Yeah, there's such a paradox in it. You're exploring the limits of your imagination in this world that doesn't exist and trying to bring it into this dimension. And there's tension in that act that's so exciting. And that's the alchemy of music.
I love that. The alchemy of music. I love that. I adore that. It's so true. The thing about paradoxes that always amazes me, Ellen, is that there's such an element of unrest in that. But yet at the same time, it instills us to go to a place that maybe we wouldn't go to before. I use in my own teaching when I teach vocalists, I use the phrase controlled abandon. You know, it's kind of like what Boulanger is getting back to. But I get the impression with you, you're looking for a similar thing in your music making. There's that unrest, or as you referred to it in one of your interviews, as friction. I loved that.
Yeah. I mean, I love thinking about friction. It's so life-giving. You know, it's the beginning of fire, of heat, which is a huge part of life, and it's movement. It doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing. You know, friction is two opposing things coming together. And it's fun to explore big concepts like that through sound, because in some ways you don't have to obey the normal rules of gravity or other rules of physics. You can just make friction create whatever you want it to make.
It's very exciting. And here you have this huge palette. You've done everything. In fact, really, my first question to you today was, who are you really?
I'm all of it, Pamela.
I think it's a valid point. And listen, I want to go back to your early upbringing, because I do believe as an artist that where we grow up and the elements which we grow up with really affect who we are. So let's talk about you growing up in Tennessee. I know that vocal music was a definite part of your life with singing in choruses, but was there a country western element to the influence in your music making?
I wouldn't say that was the strongest element. My parents grew up in Western Tennessee in Memphis, and so even though we lived in East Tennessee with more of the Appalachian kind of folk music that
Right.
is indigenous, or not indigenous, sorry, with the Appalachian folk music that comes from that region, they were more interested in the music of Memphis, some music of Motown, some other music from Memphis, and so we grew up listening to a lot of that. To top 40 hits. We grew up going to church. I was immersed in church music, which I know is a huge inspiration for so many incredible artists ac across the board. I grew up playing percussion in a school band, and that was really inspirational because of the wide palette and the power of percussion in orchestras. Incredible.
Wow, all
I
the
grew up playing
various
piano as
instruments.
well.
Okay, so you're answering one of my questions already about percussion. I feel there's such a strong element in all your writing with percussive instruments, but we'll get back to that in a minute because
Hey.
I want to tie it in with something else. Here you are growing up in Tennessee. You end up going to school in New York City. You get your Bachelor of Fine Arts.
I went to Columbia in New York City for my undergrad. And then I went to Thailand. And then I went to CalArts. That was the kind of whole pattern.
What took you to Thailand?
I wanted to go abroad when I was in college. And then I decided to not go abroad because New York was so rich culturally and on so many levels that I didn't want to leave the city. I wanted to really get the most I could out of being there for college. So I took a job teaching music at a school in outside of Chiang Mai, Thailand, and it was a really wonderful experience. And I went from there to a theater in Bangkok where I was working with Thai classical musicians. And truly, it was such an incredible, immersive, educational experience for me. And it really opened up my eyes to a whole other world of music with different structures, different
Right.
rules, different sound worlds, and different ways of communicating.
This is so fascinating to me. I tell you, that brings us back to the percussion because I always feel there's a strong element with bells in your music. I guess the texture, there's a dancing quality in your work. And I wondered if that was connected to your experience in Thailand because certainly I have been there. I have not done opera there. But I am somewhat familiar with it, and it is distinctly different. So here you are engaging with this whole new palette.
Growing up in church, there was a bell chorus. And one of the coolest things about bells is how complex the tones are. You know, it has this whole kind of cloud of sound that it's such a unique timbre. So I can't think of any other instrument that in one strike creates this whole cloud of tones. And I love how it complexifies anything. If you add a gong to it, if you, or a tam-tam, you know, any of these percussion instruments that have this rich timbral palette, it really can deepen the conversation of the piece.
So let's talk about your opera, Prism. This is a beautiful piece. It's a difficult subject. It's an important subject. And you won the Pulitzer Prize. How has that changed your life?
Well, having a Pulitzer Prize just shines the light on the work and on the subject matter of sexual assault and emotional abuse. And I'm so happy that this piece spoke to people. The librettist, Roxy Perkins, and I took a really long time finding the way to tell the story because it's such a challenging subject matter, which means that we both had to sit with the subject matter for a long time. And we started working on the project before the Me Too movement began. And it premiered at LA Opera just as Brett Kavanaugh was getting interviewed for his position on the Supreme Court. And so the shifting conversation of the national landscape around the piece was a really interesting experience for us, where we started working on the piece at a time when this was not really something that was a common conversation in, you know, casually. And then as we developed the piece, by the time we were ready to bring it into the world, it was a really big, it was a conversation that was kind of echoing in a lot of different ways through the country. So Yeah, it's just such an honor, obviously. I mean, that's, you can't even say how much having a Pulitzer means because of the incredible people throughout time who have gotten one. And it takes a whole village to make a piece like that.
Right. What a fantastic piece it is. What
Thank
a
you.
beautiful piece. I talked about in the intro about your otherworldly sound. Is that something you're aware of? Is that something that you're trying to conjure with texture?
I'm curious, what part of it seems otherworldly? Can you kind of put a finger on it or
I think
have
that
a
all of your
moment?
music has an otherworldly kind of aura to it.
Ooh.
You take us into a dreamscape. Let me put it that way.
Ooh.
When I listened to the first track on Big Majestic, the title track, I adored it. I felt elements of film composers, James Horner and Thomas Newman, at the same time feeling some sort of impressionistic almost approach to no boundaries in the landscape in your music.
Thank you.
And that's where, in the intro, where I talked about looking for transcendence, that maybe that's what I'm getting to, that your music conjures in me.
Thank you. When I was writing Big Majestic, I would walk out to a pier and watch the light reflecting on the water. And I would take a recording of the music as it was at that moment and play it again and again and watch the light reflecting on the water and try
Okay.
to kind of tune the music to have the same emotional frequency as that light. And that was part of the composition process of those themes and those chords and the melody, which then comes back a few times, a few different ways throughout the whole album of Big Majestic.
Gotcha. So we're talking about a real vibrational quality.
Yeah, and that's my personal experience, and I love what it brought up for you, and I love that there's something in common about that music can kind of evoke those images, especially wordless music can take you to other
Right.
emotional depths.
Oh, yeah. And how, baby. So, when we get to sound walk, you're doing the same thing. Here again, it is otherworldly, but yet it is, again, paradox. It's of that moment. You're taking the traveler too. And I have to say, on a side note, Ellen, I thought it was adorable that you chose Primrose Hill in London as one of your garden spots.
It's a beautiful hill, and the view from up there is great.
It is. I lived in London for 20 years. So I know it really well. And when I read that, I thought, how interesting she chose Primrose Hill. You could have been in Hampstead, or there are so many different areas, but
Yeah,
that was so adorable.
we wanted a more central urban park. And so we created a sound walk in the Regent's Park and Primrose Hill.
So tell me this, is there a process to your composition? I mean, you just explained part of it, going out and looking at the light dancing on the water and the reflection, which is unbelievably powerful. But do you go to the synthesizer first? Do you go to the piano? How do you approach your music making?
Every piece is a little different, I'll say, but every piece also has some things in common. So I'll usually try to get a visual image of what the piece should evoke. Either it's a location or a specific moment in time, or if it's a libretto, then the scene that's been carved out, like what's the color of the lighting, what's the quality of this tension between these people. I'll try to really dive into a particular moment and hold that in my mind as a way to ground the music so that it's connected throughout the piece. And then I'll take that image and go to the piano and find chords, some themes, some really kind of bare bones structural elements that I can play with to create the piece.
Okay.
And then I'll start sketching stuff out. I use voice memos on my phone a lot, which is really useful.
Yeah.
So I'll press record and kind of improvise with those elements. Sing with them, play with them. And then I also believe in using time. So I try to stop working at the end of the day before I feel quite finished so that it feels like what comes next is open. And then I can come back the next morning and listen to it and see how it sits with time having kind of affected my perspective. And then I take that and work it to get it more detailed and then eventually start working into the composition program. But for a piece like Big Majestic, for the album, for most of the pieces, I kind of skipped the composition program. So I went from the piano, the sketches, then into the recorded music and then edited that to make the songs.
So you and Paul McCartney on your voice memos. I know he talks a lot about that, and I know you love and admire the
Impressed.
Beatles.
Exactly.
It's interesting when you hear Paul McCartney talk about writing, he makes it sound so simple. But I think he was the music man. I think he was the melody meister. He would just have a tune and put it down in the voice memo, and there you go. Just think if Beethoven had a voice memo,
Yeah, that would be incredible. What would we have, you know?
a lot more, a lot more. What I loved about Soundwalk is that you're doing what probably a lot of people have wanted to do. We all go and walk in our favorite park and we listen to music, but it's someone else's music. And you're looking at the earth, you're looking at this beautiful response to nature, and you're giving it to the walker and the listener. It's a really interesting project.
Thank you. You know, there have been some people throughout time who have created soundwalks. Janet Cardiff is somebody who I really look up to, and she made some really beautiful soundwalks. There's one in Central Park. And for my soundwalk, I wanted for it to be a free work of public art in public parks around the world. And this point that it is accessible, that all you need is a smartphone to be able to access the work, was really important to me. So the sound walk follows you as you move through the park, almost like a film score would, so that the listener becomes a composer of the work. As you turn onto a path, the music will change because you did that. And if you want to stay in that soundscape a little longer, then you can sit on a bench. So you're defining as a listener your own experience. And yeah, it's been so thrilling to hear about people's experiences doing this project, and it's ongoing. And I'm looking forward to, you know, continuing to create soundwalks in parks around the world.
What I love is that you have a relationship with Los Angeles. You said something about Griffith Park being a big challenge for you. I adored that because not every New Yorker or every East Coaster really has an affection for Los Angeles. I do. And when I hear you talking about it and living in both places, I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, it's a different landscape. There's more space, and different art thrives there. Yeah, I love Los Angeles. It's
I
such
think
a
that's so
rich,
great.
inspiring city. It's beautiful. There are beautiful parks, there's the ocean, and it's so vibrant with so much great food and music. It's everything.
So spread out, you've got to search for your musical colleagues, but when you find them, they're incredible.
And some of the works on Big Majestic were inspired by views from Los Angeles or specific places within Griffith Park. For example, West Coast Sky Forever
Oh,
was
yeah.
written to evoke the height and the view from the top of this mountain peak in Griffith Park. And for those of you who don't know Griffith Park very well, it's a great park in LA. And if you imagine the Hollywood sign, it's basically the mountain to the right of the Hollywood sign. There are all these trails that go through Griffith Park.
Thank you. You know, I've got to ask you, because there's so much color in your sound and everything you're talking about, you know, in nature. Are you a synesthete?
I have a version of synesthesia. If I see something, the colors have a sound to me.
Right.
But it doesn't happen the way it happened for Messiaen, where he would hear something and it would have a color. It's kind of, I see a color and it has a sound association.
Right. Do you with numbers as well?
Nope. Not in a way that's part of my creative practice. You know, I think everything's kind of connected in our brains, but not in a way that's directly part of my creative practice.
Well, let's talk about Big Majestic, because you got a big release here, August 30th. So how did this come out of Soundwalk?
So I was on a road trip with some friends in Colorado, and none of them had been able to see a Soundwalk, because Soundwalk is free and accessible to anyone in any of these specific locations around the world, but you have to be in Central Park, Griffith Park, Golden Gate Park, in Regent's Park in London, in Ueno Park in Tokyo. You have to be in one of these parks to hear the music. So I put on a track of a music that was from Soundwalk, and my friends were so overjoyed to hear the music. And we were driving through this beautiful landscape in Colorado, and it interacted in a different way with this landscape that it made me want to explore taking that music from Soundwalk and making an album out of it. So I sat down with the hours and hours and hours and hours of material, which is Soundwalk, and had to figure out how to take this music that is supposed to feel endless, that's supposed to go infinitely, and how to make it finite, and how to tell a story. I had to figure out how to take the listener on their own journey throughout the album. And once I started working on it, the album took on a life of its own and became this one big composition. So if you listen to the album from beginning to end, everything connects. Everything's related. There are themes that come in, that come back later, and echo throughout the work. And the journey of this piece is up a mountain and down a mountain, from beginning of the album to the end of the album.
About your association with the Concertgebouw Orchestra in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I had the great honor of being their composer in residence this season. And I went with my family to Amsterdam for about 2 months. And we lived there, got bicycles, did the whole thing.
Of course.
Got a bicycle seat for our baby. She biked around. And I got to meet and work with some of the musicians in the orchestra. And I'm writing a work for them, for the whole orchestra, which is going to be conducted by Klaus Mäkelä at Carnegie Hall in November. And they're taking the work on tour. It's going to be also at the Kennedy Center in DC. So
really
I'm
exciting.
Putting the finishing touches on that piece this week, and I'm really excited for it to happen.
Oh, bravo. That's wonderful. Did you find the orchestra good to work with? Were they receptive to you?
They're great. I mean, they are the best. They are so talented and can do anything, both technically and also emotionally. So if there's something challenging on the page, they want to do it and they can do it. And their attitude has been just great. And I know that we're going to make a really great thing together.
Oh, Ellen, wow, that is very exciting. Bravo. And good luck to you. This sounds wonderful. Listen, just for fun, let's say you had a chance to have dinner with anyone in the world who has passed on. Is there someone you would like to have dinner with and talk to?
Yeah, I would have dinner with my husband's mother, who passed away. And I
never got
to meet her. Oh, thanks. Yeah, she was rather extraordinary.
What do you think you would talk about now, Ellen?
Probably stupid stuff, you know?
Which is great.
Like the fact that my baby, who's one, thinks that all animals are dogs and that dogs moo, you know? But I think part of me, I don't want to meet my heroes. I want to meet the people who made the people I love.
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. That is such a beautiful answer. My gosh, how wonderful. Do I feel an opera coming on maybe about
I don't think so.
Is there another opera? Do you think, is there a story going through your mind that you might put to paper?
I'm exploring different stories. And Roxy Perkins and I, the
You
libretto
gel.
from Prism, and my writing partner,
Yeah.
we're really interested in writing a musical. So we're diving into that and exploring
God.
story ideas. And she has the best ideas, and they're so electric. I love working with Roxy.
A musical. Okay, we'll watch for you on Broadway now. And then you write that hit song, and you can check off all the boxes. I can just see your award shelf now with everything that's going to be won over the years. Well, I've got to ask you my signature question that I ask everyone. If there is one word or phrase that really describes who you are to the core of your soul, can you share that with us?
I would say curious. It's kind of an invitation to always go deeper.
You got it. You've absolutely got it. The distinguished composer and sound artist, Ellen Reed. She continues to share her creative voice in classical compositions, film, avant-pop, and much, much more. The featured music today was from her recording, Big Majestic, which is available at all music purchasing sites online. And find more about her at ellenreedmusic.com. And if you will go to Center Stage with PamelaCoon.com, you will be able to support the arts and hear artists in interviews from the world of film, theater, music, literature, and dance. To all my listeners out there, stay safe. This is Pamela Coon, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.